1649 to St. George's Hill. A ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste grounds grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all.
I'm your host, Kevin Annett. It's good to have you all back. Our show is every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. Pacific time at www.bbsradio.com/Radio Free Canada. It's sponsored by the Provisional Council of the Republic of Canada. You can see our work at canadarepublic.ca and contact us at republicofcanada@gmail.com. We have a very important show today, and we welcome all the new listeners and those all over Canada and beyond who are tuning in today. We have with us today Dean Clifford, a frontline common law warrior who had been held illegally in a Brandon prison for 16 months on trumped-up charges because of his work to bring enlightenment and the common law knowledge to the people of Canada. He's going to be joined by Teresa Harrison, who works with the Republic. She was original signatory to the January 15th proclamation establishing the new jurisdiction of a common law republic in Canada. Teresa Harrison is going to join us today as well. She fought tirelessly to get Dean released from prison, and we are honored to have Dean with us today, especially in the light of the fact that we are highlighting the work of the Republic, especially having to do with the establishment of common law courts over the next period, because people are finding that regardless of the issue, this is one of the main tools we are finding that help us in this struggle. The law itself, when put to the work of the people, and rather than the corporate entities that are controlling it at present. So it's a real honor to introduce Dean. We're going to be here for the next hour. And in the weeks ahead, we're going to be continuing to explore the themes of the common law and also looking at the work people are doing on the ground, especially in Ontario, where we have 9 functioning branches for the Republic, and in Alberta and the West Coast, where the district conveners are now organizing actions around such issues as fraud by the Canadian Revenue Agency, the abduction of children within social services systems, and the threats to our livelihood and to the land itself. So, without further ado, let me bring on our guest today. Dean, are you there? Yes, apparently Dean is not on the line yet. We expect him probably within the next 5 minutes. One of the things that we urge people to do when they're tuning in for the first time is to go and look at the material on our website, canadarepublic.ca. It's the fruition of many years of work of people in the common law movement, and prior to that, the work of the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State, itccs.org. You know, for some of us, we came to the conclusion that since the Crown of England, the Vatican and these other corporate agencies literally have blood on their hands, the blood of tens of thousands of children across Canada murdered legally through their system of Crown law in the residential schools, on the reservations, and beyond. The children who are still trafficked today, we know that this is a result of a legal system that allowed it all to happen. And in a common law court verdict that is well known now in February 2013 that found the Queen of England, Pope Benedict, Stephen Harper, and many others, with the so-called Dirty 30, the convicted defendants in the case of genocide in Canada, that conviction allowed us to say, lawfully now, we have the obligation, and a moral obligation, to establish a new legal jurisdiction in Canada. And this is one of the reasons that the Republic was declared in January 15th. People do not have to support a system of crime and fraud and genocide any longer. As a matter of fact, under international law, you're obligated not to pay taxes to a criminal regime like Canada and the Crown of England and the Vatican. So that's part of the rationale of why some of us are here. Others of us have come to this through their struggles over many years to simply challenge the corruption and fraud in the court system. And that's another big issue for people. And one of the things I wanted to point out at that site, canadarepublic.ca, is the actual documents showing this evidence of crime. We're standing on solid evidence and not hearsay. And that's very important, you know, in the wake of a lot of these government-funded smear campaigns and misinformation campaigns to distract people from the very lawfulness of what we're doing. It's important for people to look at the evidence. So I really urge people to do that. And again, if you want to sign up, we've got over 1,000 active members now across the country, including in the indigenous community. And two of my co-hosts today, who may or may not be commenting because we have had a technical issue with one of them connecting up, but Ryan Gable and Katie Stokewell, Katie from the Algonquin Nation, Peter Yellowquill, who was on a few weeks ago with the Ojibwe Nation in Manitoba, working to form alliances between the indigenous nations and the so-called settler nations, or non-indigenous people in Canada, in this new effort to bring about real change from below, according to the common law. So, without further ado, I hope that they are online. I know they were calling in from Teresa's cell phone in Manitoba, and Ryan is with us. Ryan, why don't you introduce yourself? Yeah, how are you doing? I'm sorry it's taken a few weeks to have you on, but you know, we did meet once on, or several times on your own radio show. Why don't you just introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, my name is Ryan Gable. I am the host of a popular radio show called The Secret Teachings, which is named after the philosopher Manly P. Hall's greatest work, The Secret Teachings of All Ages. I've been a radio host for about 6 years now, going on 6 years. I'm also an author of a couple of books. One is called The Grand Illusion, Slaves to Perception, and kind of explores the more esoteric occult aspects of our what we call reality. It also dives much into a whole a sort of other things, whether it's health or governmental black operations projects, child trafficking, ritual sacrifice, the history and the symbolism behind all of it. And then, you know, one of the big things that I've done on the radio is I've really kind of opened an audience up that most people that are in what they call the alternative media don't tend to present information, I feel like, in the same way that I do, because I don't really stand on a an official side, whether it's officially mainstream or if it's officially alternative. I just kind of go where the evidence takes me. And one of the biggest things that I think has irked me is the issue of not just child trafficking, but ritual sacrifice and the fact that it still goes on today. And in researching everything that you've done, Kevin, I had spent a couple of months trying to get a hold of you before we finally made contact, trying to get you on the show. I've had my email hacked several times, emails deleted. I've had my website taken down by people who have disliked what I've been talking about. And even recently, and you came on my show and we discussed this in the last 2 months, I think, my show is removed from the Dark Matter Radio Network, which had been an affiliation with Art Bell, because I had refused, and I even have the emails to prove this, I refused to censor myself to the issue of child pedophilia and child trafficking. And they told me that if I was going to continue to cover that, no matter how factual it was, no matter if I had the evidence or not, that I had to remove my show from that network. But other than that, I have been working tirelessly just to basically expose this system of corruption that exists not only in Canada and not only in the United States, but it seems to be every country on this planet, small group of individuals who understand the significance of certain dates, certain times, certain days, certain months. They use those to their advantage in certain types of rituals. And of course, money is one of the biggest contributing factors when it comes to things such as child trafficking, billions and billions and billions of dollars, all unfortunately, you know, ran under the guise of God and protection and right. safety for children. It's just incredible how they distort that image of the true Jesus for financial, political, and economic purposes.
Well, you know, it dovetails a lot what you're talking about with our theme today, because one of the work, the major campaigns of the Republic is in establishing these common law courts to train common law sheriffs who have the power to go in and make arrests against these known child traffickers and child rapists, including the people already convicted for having done that against Indigenous children here in Canada. So it's we're going to tie together these different themes and giving people a practical way to do something, not rely on the police and the politicians who are colluding in these child trafficking networks themselves. So I really welcome you on and welcome your knowledge and expertise. Do you want to, before we get to Dean, do you want to mention your websites or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. My website, my main website is www.thesecretteachings.info. And on the website, you can access years and years of free radio shows. They're not podcasts. They were older shows from different stations like CBS and some big, big networks we used to be on. And you can also access an assortment of other free materials on my website, as well as being able to grab a copy of my book.
Thank you, Ryan. No, we'll have a chance to talk about that more. I was just told that Dean is on the line. So, Dean, welcome to the show.
Can you hear me?
I sure can. Welcome, brother.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. I know the whole world is interested in how you're doing. How is life on the outside of the jail, finally?
I was just talking about that on my update video the other day. Well, I'm on the highway right now, so we don't have the best reception. I just went to my house for the first time in 18 months to get some clothes and some work materials and some boots so I can be working out at the clean right now for a little bit, and we realize we're going to make it back in time to get on the air with you. So we're on cell phone here, but it's the first day or two. I had a little bit of a sensory overload, and it was hard for me to do everything I was doing. I just had to shut down and relax and not talk to people for a few hours. But I'm gonna get back in the swing now. So things are really good. I'm feeling pretty good, and apparently I look better than I have in years, according to a few people. So.
Well, that's good. I wanted to reassure you that, you know, if there's a technical problem with the call-in today or whatever, we are going to have you back on again next week if you're free, because I know your case is a big one and there's a lot of connected issues. We want to get into this. So, just so you and the listeners know, we're going to have more time for you to get into this. Let me just ask you a simple question, and this was one of the questions Katie Stokoe actually had for you. How are you different now than before you went into jail? What have you learned? What do you have to share about that?
Well, boy, that's a really tough question. I'm still trying to figure out if I'm different at all, to be honest with you. I mean, it didn't take a day or two to really acclimatize and everything. I find I haven't really done any interviews yet. I think the update that I did, people noticed that I wasn't doing any ranting like I normally do and getting really angry and starting to swear. And if anything, I can say I didn't come out of jail being pissed off and ready to take on the world again and swing and fight and get right back into it. It's, if anything, I've kind of learned a lot of patience now, and I'm feeling a lot more calm, and just want to make sure that I'm doing things a lot more concisely from now on. And I really don't know if I've changed at all. I don't think I've been out long enough to really know, but I seem to be a pretty good student, pretty happy and joking around more than I used to before I went in, so I think I'm okay.
Well, fair enough. You know, I know that people tuning in may not have all the information, but a basic question that's asked to me all the time was, well, why did they put him away so long in the first place? Why were they determined to keep you on ice?
Well, a lot of that was admitted to me by people even working in the jail and sheriffs at the courthouse inadvertently, where it was pointed out to me that I actually probably was made the biggest target that CSIS has on their list currently in Canada, because they fear the truth movement so much that we are the worst terrorists that they have on their book. And it was time to shut me up because of the amount of energy and the amount of traction we were starting to get in the truth movement. And as soon as you start having seminars where hundreds of people are showing up and you're doing radio shows where thousands of people are tuning in to listen and your videos are starting to get hundreds of thousands of views and everybody's waking up and you're not seen as a nutcase, believe it or not, even though I rant all the time, They viewed me as one of the more grounded and well-researched and well-spoken people there was, that the mainstream audience was kind of going, wait a minute, this guy makes a lot of sense. He doesn't sound crazy at all. And they really feared that, and they really had to cool down the movement, and that's why they did it. But they've admitted they've been monitoring me. They had surveillance in my house for 3 years before any of this. We've got documents proving that now. They've been watching me like a hawk for a long time. And for them to choose that particular moment to move in and trump up a bunch of crap on me to keep me in jail for 16 months, it was well orchestrated because they took down a number of other people across Canada, around the world, Australia, United Kingdom, you name it. A lot of what they call top figures all went down at the same time to put them in jail for a while just to try to say, hey, you know what, you were an annoyance before, but now you're actually becoming a force. And we're going to slow that down, or we're going to destroy it.
So in other words, you were a figurehead and they wanted to scare people by taking you out. Is it that simple?
Absolutely, it's that simple. They can throw you in jail anytime they want to on trumped-up charges, but they everything was really well-coordinated. Like I say, it was half an hour after the final day of the conference in Hamilton. They knew exactly where I was. They could have arrested me before the conference. They could have arrested me any time, but they chose that particular moment to do it because they want people to know we have the power to do whatever we want, whenever we want. So whether you're right or wrong, we'll take you on a moment's notice.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's many examples of that recently of them doing exactly that on people campaigning on different issues, as if to say, look, we have absolute power over your lives and nothing you can do about it. But, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of like a smear campaign. There's a boomerang effect. After a while, that gets people really angry and, in fact, more awake and more aware. Are you finding that? Like, when you were in jail, I know that you had contact with some of the other prisoners. Were they responding to your knowledge and what you had to offer?
It was amazing how receptive a lot of the people were. My record right now stands at helping 7 people out of jail, most of them with all charges dismissed altogether. And so it was very, very successful. A lot of people wanted to hear a lot more about it as soon as we got out. A lot of people, like I say, that were in there, as soon as we start to, people know the truth when they hear it, right? And of course, people where I was in Brandon Correctional Facility, there was a lot of Native in there, obviously, and they've grown up their whole lives being discriminated against, and they are so sick of this whole system. They just don't even bother fighting anymore. The minute they get charged, they just flee out and get away. They don't even want to bother going to court because they know they're not going to get a fair shot at things. And as soon as they just spent an hour listening to me, they were like, yeah, you know what, it's kind of making me almost want to start fighting for my rights and starting fighting. They're so beaten up and they're so hopeless in this system, and everybody was very receptive. Nobody got angry with me. Nobody tried to tell me I was full of crap. A lot of people that I spoke to ended up firing their lawyers and representing themselves and getting out right away. Everything they were doing was working 100% better for them than it was for me, which was kind of laughable. I was like, man, I can't get the cell phone right now, but I'm getting other people out, and that was the simple fact that they just were having none of my nonsense in the courtroom, apparently. Sheriff's dragging me out when I even tried to speak, shutting my speakerphone off, my microphone off when I was on video court. So even though it looked like I wasn't being very successful, everybody else I was helping were having no problems with the court system. And everybody there was very receptive to it. It was so simple that people with no education from Northern Reserves were able to do it with no problem.
Wow. Now, you know, I want to spend the latter part of the show talking about where to go from here, some of your plans, how we can all work together in using this as a way to get even more people involved in the movement. But I wanted to ask Ryan and Katie if they had any questions for you as well. Ryan, do you have any?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, because it's a question that I sometimes get asked myself on my radio show, do you ever regret getting involved in what you're involved in or kind of wish you could go back to sleep? Is there ever a moment where you think that?
No, and I can tell you that now after spending 16 months in jail, the hardships I went through that had nothing to do with the law stuff, it was things in my personal life that were the hardest things I went through. I went through a very, very bad emotional crash last fall and into December when very, very bad things happened to me. And even the guards at the jail were like, so, like, what are you going to do when you get out, Dean? Was any of this worth it? Are you just going to drop all this nonsense and go back to, you know, at least pretending that you're going to cooperate just to be left alone? I thought about it for a couple of weeks, and I came back to those guards working there, and I said, no, you know what, this is worth it, and this is what's right, and I would do it all over again. It's, big deal. You threw me in jail for 16 months, I don't care. I'd rather do what's right. And just for the record, I lost some stuff in my life that I was not willing to part with in exchange for this movement. So,
well, we all have to sacrifice.
Yep, I lost something that I'm never going to get back, a few things in my life, and it was still worth it because I'm doing what's right at the end of the day.
Right on. I know Katie has a question for you, too.
Hi, Dean. Katie here. When I was in communications with Teresa on a number of occasions when you're inside, she had talked about various examples of ones within trying to break you, break your spirit. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, they made things pretty difficult on me. Like I say, the correctional center I was in is known not only in Manitoba but across Canada as being one of the worst institutions there is. There is nothing there. There's no programs available. You don't leave the range that you're in, which is about a 250-square-foot area with 12 other guys, 24 hours a day. You do not leave that small range. There's no windows. There's no sunlight. There is nothing. You just sit there and you rot and you have nothing to do. When that wasn't affecting me, they threw me in solitary confinement for 30 days. When I came out of that island, they put me back on a different range with a bunch of people I didn't know. I took my phone away for 90 days, so even my contact with the outside world was completely removed from me. They were denying visits. They were stopping all my mail. I was strip searched. Every time I left the jail, every time I came back on my way to court, it was randomly throughout the week. Like, everything they did to me was just to basically say, we can do whatever we want to you, whenever we want to you. You have no choice in the matter, and I wish they thought that were really going to get to me.
Yeah. So what kept you going, Dean?
I really don't know. I've just always been really good at dealing with things my entire life, and I tend to really not let things get me down and bother me. But even then, I'm not going to lie to anybody. Like, starting last October, I had a pretty bad emotional breakdown because of all the personal things that were going on in my life while I was in there, and it wasn't good. It took me a couple of months to recover from it. So I think it just was better person and better able to deal with things, and I don't know. I feel pretty good, and I feel like it was a really interesting test for me to go through.
Yeah, and overall, that test is exactly what it is, and I think in the very end, it makes you much, much stronger.
There's no question. So, and I don't think it's made me jaded, and I don't think it's made me think that the world's an awful place now. You know, there's no joy left anymore, and just the anger. I think I'm actually less angry than when I went in, and it's not because I'm. They weren't able to break me at all. I don't know how to really explain that. Like I say, it's yeah.
I wanted to ask as well if Teresa had any, you know, if she wanted to come on and just remark. I know that she worked a lot to get you out, and if you could also comment on what actually happened at your bail hearing and why did they let you out?
Well, that's a much longer story. It took a long time, and it's... A lot of it had to do with, to be honest with you, it's not anything new I was doing. The clerks at the courthouse in Winnipeg did everything that they could to put roadblocks in our way, to not file paperwork, to make things difficult for us, to not give any aid and assistance, to not call people back, to not help any of us when we finally were able to get documents to the courts. The Brandon Correctional would not allow me access to official votes for the first 5 months I was there. They kept everything away from me, so I couldn't possibly file an affidavit or supporting any of my motions. The entire reason I was in there that long was because they intentionally railroaded us from being able to have effective access to the courts and to do anything, to be able to get bail hearing, to order transcripts. Everything that they did was just a roadblock. And we've got all the evidence. Even to the point where they had produced a fake court order issued by a Judge Abra at one point saying that I'm prohibited from filing new bail hearings, bail applications, motions, or even having a habeas corpus hearing until we took that to the Justice Minister's office and said, hey, what the F is this? You got judges issuing court orders now prohibiting somebody from filing motions and bail reviews? Is that what this has come down to? And, of course, 20 minutes later, we get some of my people got a phone call from the court saying, oh, that's not what we meant. Oh, you know, you can come down and file any time. Oh, that court order was an old one from 2 years ago. It was dated 3 weeks previous. They're trying to say, oh, there's a mistake in the system. That was an old court order. Not only that, we got the judge's name wrong. It was spelled wrong. Well, no, they're just so full of shit, and they're all conniving
So in other words, your basic human rights were denied. Your due process was completely denied.
You have been denied due process to law, remedy, and effective access to a real court for 16 months until one judge finally had enough of it and said, you come to me, you'll have a hearing in front of me, and I will see to it that you get due process. And that you have access to administration of justice. And even then, it wasn't easy. It still took us 3 months to get the hearing we wanted. But when we got the hearing we wanted, I was out that day.
Right. Well, it's funny. They got their own garbage to cover up now. You know, you find this in systems when they come down on people, they have to say, well, we really had to do it, you see. He's such a threat to society. We just had to do all that stuff, right? Are you finding that? Did they try to justify what they did after, or...?
Well, that's the funny thing is that the de facto crown attorneys, the women who think that they're de facto crown attorneys that were coming against me in this matter, every time they spoke of what a bad person I am, I feel I don't have to obey any laws, I make up my own laws, I'm a danger to the public, I'm a danger to society, I'm a danger to everything, like just the absolute puke that these people poured on was unbelievable. They just would not stop. We were talking about how the public couldn't possibly have any faith in the administration of justice if somebody like me was released from prison. I'm such an awful person. You name it, they did it. To the point where even the last justice we went in front of was rolling his eyes and was like, oh my God, I'm like, he seemed annoyed he even had to listen to this stuff any further, but it's just, they are really, really ticked. It just went to show me how really terrified they are of the truth movement.
Right. Well, you know, it's like any unaccountable system. They've never had to answer to anybody, and now when the light has shined on them, all of the corruption's exposed. And that's the brilliance of what you did and continue to do. And that when you're willing to go that mile and you know, suffer all that stuff, they're exposed and they hate that.
Well, what ended up happening, and this is why I think it really backfired on them, is even the average, everyday, uninformed guy, who shouldn't even really care about their opinion anyways, finally started to say, yeah, what the hell is going on here? This is not justice. Like, it's clear that you guys don't like this guy, and this is personal. This has nothing to do with the administration of justice or whatever people want to believe laws are. You're just trying to hammer this guy. And even the average, everyday Joe was starting to get pissed off with what's going on, and they were getting letters from everybody saying, what the friggin' hell is going on in Manitoba? You do not have any respect for law, and, you know, they're claiming to represent the people, but they don't, because that's not what the people want.
Well, obviously, being involved in common law, you know, you understand that there's so much corruption in the legal system. But for the average person who maybe hasn't read too much into this, they haven't studied it, they haven't experienced it firsthand like you, how do we go about informing them of what this common law is all about and how corrupt and tyrannical the legal system really is? It's just a means for the rich to protect themselves.
Well, and that's part of the problem is a lot of times what we find is that people have cognitive dissonance with this stuff, right? And they're actually more willing to defend this system than they are to be receptive to the ideas we're promoting, because they're so brainwashed and deluded into believing that we need these people to govern our lives and to manage the economy, to make sure their jobs are secure and the ups and downs in the stock market and their investments and their houses and law and order. Oh, my God, what would we do without these people, right? And so that's the fear that those people face. And a lot of the time, even people like my father were not willing to look at my ideas until he actually came face-to-face with just how bad it is and how badly I was being treated and how badly the jail was, how they made things impossible for me to access the courts. Finally woke him up, and he went, oh, my God. He goes, you had no idea how bad this was and how right you were until I actually had to look at this and deal with it. And it is absolutely the most absurd frigging thing mankind could ever have come up with. And surely having no government at all is better than what we've got right now.
Well, that's what Thomas Jefferson said. He said if he had to choose between having newspapers and no government or government and no newspapers, he'd choose newspapers and no government, free press. I know Katie had a question for Teresa. Could you put her on for a minute?
Yep, she's right here.
Okay.
Hello.
Hey, Teresa. Katie,
hi,
Katie had
how are you?
Hey, it's good to have you on, as usual. Katie had a question here for you.
Okay.
Hi, Teresa. So, Teresa, I know you worked, oh, my God, you worked tirelessly to go in weekly and visit Dean and outside of the prison. You worked tirelessly to get him out. I'd like to know how it feels for you to finally have Dean out.
What's really weird is when I was driving home from the court case, when they said he's got bail, it was actually hard for me to imagine. I can't believe it. He's actually getting out today. So when I felt like that, I had a 2-hour ride home. I couldn't imagine what it felt like for Dean. It was a shock to the system.
Yeah. What do you think, Teresa, is, and I want to lead into this whole thing and ask Dean as well this question, but what's the way forward now? What do you see the best way to kind of use this as a springboard to building the movement?
Well, I believe that from the experiences Dean had and the experiences other people have had, we can now use it to help other people. And we have so much more knowledge than we did 16 months ago. And we can just move forward with that and share with other like-minded people, people who need help, people who don't really understand or are afraid of the system. Now we'll have an opportunity to help more people with that or teach them so that they can help themselves.
And by sharing that story, even if it doesn't necessarily get an immediate reaction where people begin to become active in this community, I think it at the very least plants a seed of truth that eventually will grow. Kind of like the seeds that they try to plant, the seeds of doubting yourself to try to break you in that situation. We can plant a seed of truth, and I think that it can lead to something much better in the future.
Well, I can tell you, too, there's more listeners to this program than we've had yet in our three previous broadcasts of Radio Free Canada. Also, we found in England, when some of the common law activists there were, we finally got them out of prison, the number of people coming out to the meetings there in Coventry and Birmingham and others, it just skyrocketed after, because people realized, hey, we can win. And that's a real inspiration. So we really should follow up while the iron's hot and start holding meetings and workshops, and I'm sure you're planning this, Teresa. We're going to be definitely in May when we're going to be starting to tour across the country of all the groups in the Republic. This is something we can aim for.
Yes, I agree. The more we can educate other people, the better everyone is going to be.
I wanted to ask Dean for his response to that whole question. What do we do now? Mind putting them on? There you are.
Yeah. I think that one of the things I'm really going to start making sure that people realize is the futility and uselessness of learning their system and learning their law. It's not designed for us. It's law merchant. It's not real law. It has nothing to do with us. We have to extract ourselves from the system altogether and build our own new system, build our own future, do our own thing. We just quit wasting energy on trying to figure out what they're doing and just want that. It's all fluke. It's all fantasy. Everything you're doing is fantasy, and they can change the rules in a moment's notice anytime they want to. It's their realm, right? And a realm is just it's a world they created that they suckered us into, so they're the masters, and they change the rules whenever they want to. They're the gods of that world. We've got to leave that all together. We're moving forward here. Quit wasting time trying to figure out nonsense with puke, because you can't figure out insanity. You can't figure out gravel, and that's all you're doing is graveling. Well, it's meaning with garbage. The reason you can't figure it out is because there's nothing to figure out.
Right.
They just change whatever they want to. It makes no sense. It is nonsense. Everything that goes on there is nonsense. So we're just going to stop that, and we're just going to leave. We're going to build our own new system, put our energy into us from now on instead of them. And that'll be the end of it. They had their chance. Their course could have been honorable. I don't care if 16 months later on, finally somebody was honorable. What's the difference of doing
again. In my book, they're done. They're fired. I'm out.
Right.
Whatever authority you got from me is gone. I revoke it. I took it back. You mean nothing to me. We have no accord. We're done. We have no business relationship. Get out of my life. Give everything back. Whatever you think I gave to you,
right,
control of my resources, administrative authority, I don't care what you think you got from me, it's done. I'm out. Goodbye. We don't need you because whatever authority you have, you got from me, which means I already have it, and I can do it all myself.
Well, you know, you're saying word for word what we all believe here, Dean, and that is, you know, we need new relationships. You know, they violated their contract with us. They violated an honorable relationship. Their authority is null and void. It's that simple. But, you know, when we recognize that, you've learned that through hard knocks, through your direct experience. So many people cling on to these illusions that, well, maybe we can use the system. Maybe there's somebody in there who can help us. You know, we've got to educate people and show that our energy lies in ourselves now and what we build between ourselves and others. And so I'm really happy to hear you say that.
Yeah, believe me, but you know, the research I've done over the years, the amount of people I've spoken to, the amount of knowledge I have, if I can't navigate that system, there isn't a hope in hell for the other 99.99% of this population. You'd have to spend 15 years studying this. You cannot become competent in that system. You can't. It's designed to make sure that you could never know what's going on. It's lunacy. So don't even bother with it. Just don't. If I can't do it, and they're still going to throw me in jail no matter what, then there is no remedy for anybody in that system.
You know, what I'd like to do is get you on maybe next week with Steve Finney from Kitchener. He's battled valiantly in that system to get his daughter back from the, you know, this kind of fraudulent family court system where they're trafficking children. You know, Children's Aid Society getting $100,000 for every child they seize from a family. Private corporations just milking money out of people, in this case to traffic their children. Steve's taken the system on. He's learned, like you, he's brilliant about his awareness of the system now. So I'd love to hear you guys, your perspectives on how we build something different. Maybe we can do that in the following weeks.
Yep. Well, that's why I can elaborate on why some of the most simple solutions I've heard so far, which are the most bang on, are the... Well, we'll get into that next week. Some of the people that, that do have correct solutions that are much more simple and much more direct and to the point. But, yeah, I mean, there's no it's no secret that they're stealing kids and they're baby thieves. I mean, I've got radio broadcasts I've done on other shows where we go off on tangents about child family services, which is what it is here in Manitoba. All the baby feeding that's going on. I read an article while I was in Brandon Correctional on the grassroots newspaper, which is for, like, I don't want to use the word Aboriginal. That's the one they use. But pointing out the fact that there's more than 10,000 Native children in Child and Family Services care in Manitoba alone. 10,000 just in Manitoba.
That's right. There's more children now being trafficked through social services than there was in Indian residential schools.
And not only that, Dean, but these thousands of children that are taken from their families, they are also put, a great number of them are also put intentionally in homes of child rapists that are known to have records.
This is actually worse than the residential schools could have been. This is just, and they all know it too. I speak to them about that while they're in jail, and every single person that was in jail with me, their kids are in Child Family Services custody. Every single one of them. Not one of them had custody of their kids. So it's a plague. It's a really, really bad problem. But of course,
plague. Plague is the word. It's feeding off. It's destroying the fabric of our future. And this is why, you know, it's funny, Dean, because the two issues I hear all the time from people across the country is child trafficking and Canada Revenue and the corruption in the system and courts. It's amazing. And we can get a real response now because people are now wanting to do something more than they were a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, if it is, it's one more thing, and that was one of the reasons we attack on youth especially. If they're mainstream and it's getting off the box, that's the experiment.
You were breaking up a little bit there, Dean. The reception's fading a bit, but could you just repeat that?
Okay, I was just going to say that is a concern that you people have, is that this movement is going more mainstream because everybody's tired of this. Everybody's tired of Canada Revenue Agency. Everybody's tired of paying property taxes and school taxes for crap services. And it is crap. Like, whether you agree with it or not, what you're getting for your dollar is garbage. And everybody's tired of it. People got no problem saying, hey, at least if I'm going to pay $5,000 a year in property taxes and school taxes, we should have at least a good education system and good services. But we don't. We have shit. We have the shittiest possible services mankind could ever conceive of for that money. And on that alone, people are tired of it. Never mind with them saying, you know what, I don't want to pay for any of this shit anymore. I'm done. And that list is growing. The number of people saying, no, I'm done with this altogether. We could build something better. We could do something better. And that's starting to become a more mainstream concept and belief.
Absolutely. Brian, any comments, or maybe Teresa has something to add?
Yeah, but just a moment ago, you know, talking specifically about child trafficking, that's been one of my biggest areas of research recently. And one of the things that I think is always important is to understand history, because, and it's an overstated fact, but history obviously repeats itself. We go through different cycles of oppression to revolution and then freedom and then back to oppression again. And one of the big things that I think I've discovered in researching history is if you look into Europe in the 1920s and 30s and even into the 40s, the Nazi Party in Germany ran a program called Lebensborn, and through child services in Germany, they would specifically take children who had blonde hair and blue eyes, or any other child who they considered to be racially pure. And it had a lot to do with eugenics and racial purity, racial hygiene programs, and ethnic cleansing, but it also had a lot to do with raising the children to be subservient to the state. And that program mirrors very closely what the CPS does in America. And not only that, but as they raise kids through the distorted education system, I don't think we can even really call it education, more like indoctrination, what we have is that children are taken, and of course the states get paid thousands of dollars by the federal government for every child that is taken. And of course, you know, you mentioned children that are given to known child rapists, and it's just unbelievable how much that actually happens. And the kids then, on top of that, when they're taken to CPS from parents who maybe they want a second medical opinion, so CPS comes and takes the kids and the parents get arrested, and then they take the kids and they put them on high doses of psychotropic drugs, mixing the different types of drugs together, the kids become these zombies. It's history repeating itself, and the best way to control the future, especially to prevent types of revolutions and to prevent people from uprising, is to control the youth. And that is exactly what is going on here in America and Canada.
Brian, I can't resist, but I got to jump in and mention that for people who don't know, Lakehead Psychiatric Hospital, Thunder Bay, Nanaimo Indian Hospital, the Charles Campbell Hospital in Edmonton, those are all facilities where the Lebensborn Project was continued after the war with SS doctors. We have, and I've talked to the woman who's the sole survivor at the Lincoln Park Air Force Base in Calgary between 1956 and 58, where an SS doctor, codenamed Bob Armstrong with the Royal Canadian Air Force, was murdering children in these experiments. And, you know, we've got that all on file. We've campaigned around that. This kind of shit is going on constantly as we speak, and it's a continuation. If people haven't read the book The Fourth Reich by Jim Mars, they should, because it shows how that whole system continued after the war here in North America. And the present Pope, who's visiting, he's speaking to the U.S. Congress in September and the General Assembly, this nice, smiling, beneficent Pope Francis, he did the same program in Argentina, where they trafficked over 30,000 children of political prisoners. These are the things that we're naming, and the common law movement is the way to adjudicate it and to bring justice to bear on it. Anyway, long end of speech. I just had to mention that. You want to...
No, that was perfect for kind of just right with what I said. I think it went very well. I mean, I know that the program's absolutely continued. I didn't know in detail about the different people who were involved, but I mean, it absolutely continues. Most of the programs that run by the Central Intelligence Agency, even NASA was established. A lot of these German doctors, scientists, research associates, all of them continued the work here in the United States, in Canada, South America, and it goes on right to this day just under the guise of what we perceive as freedom and democracy, at least here in America.
Right. Dean, do you and Teresa want to jump in and make any comments?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think we need to consider the broader scope of this problem as well, with what a perfect and disgusting weapon that is to threaten to take people's kids. If you talk to the average guy who's ever heard of any stuff that we're doing, and even people that don't know what the free man movement is, the average family is so terrified that if they don't vaccinate their kids and send them to public school, that the government will come and take their kids. So on a broader scope, this is an overt warfare that basically gets compliance from people to say, if you don't do what the government says, we will come and take your children. Is what the broader scope of all this is, and that's even more terrifying, that we're basically putting fear into an entire population that if they even dare speak out against the government, you stand a chance of losing your kids. They will come and kick your door in, they will kick your teeth in, they will take your kids, and you're going to have to spend like 10 years paying CFS and an army of lawyers to get them back.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, correct, Dean. And this is why it's so important that that common law volunteers, we rally together and support one another, because there's power in numbers. If we go it alone individually, we're more of a target. But if we gather in numbers, we're that much stronger.
You know how many times I've heard from people, I would love to get involved in this movement, but I have kids. And I'm terrified they'll come and take my kids, or this will affect my kids.
Right.
And that's the telltale signal of tyranny right there, when people are terrified of what they perceive to be their government coming and taking their kids just for speaking out against what they don't think is right that the government's doing. You have a very, very big problem. So, and a lot of people have said that, and my usual response to that to people is, no, because you have kids, you should be involved in this kind of a movement. But that's easier to say than it is to do, right? Like, as a guy who has no kids right now and just went 16 months in jail for speaking out against the government, I'm not the poster child of, don't worry, they can't do that.
Well, you know, Dean, when I lost my kids to the system, and I couldn't see them for more than, like, once a week for many years, what replaced that grief in me was the determination and anger to not let that happen again. And it's like you say, it seems bad at first. When you go through the fire, you get stronger from this stuff. And we got to show people, don't be afraid, get angry, get determined to stop this shit.
Yep. Otherwise, you get divorced.
We got 5 minutes left. I wanted to ask if you or Teresa have things you want to mention that you think are important. We'll definitely be back next week to carry this on, but let me leave you this last 5 minutes. The floor is yours.
Oh, okay. Oh, geez, I'm going to sit down now. One thing I will say is that I'll maybe expand a little bit on why they weren't able to break me when I was in jail. And I think a very big component to that is the level of support I had on the outside and knowing I'm not alone. When I've got new people I've never even met before in my life showing up to visit me at the jail, and just jump right in and get on board and start helping me with everything I was doing, like Teresa. And another gentleman who stopped in a few times just to visit me and give me updates and stuff. The letters I got from around the world, people showing, hey, you know what? Thank you, Dean. We acknowledge the fact that you're in jail, and you're in jail because you're trying to help people like us. So don't think we don't appreciate it. And I got hundreds of letters in jail, even though I found out yesterday just how much mail they were keeping from me. The stuff that did get through was still hundreds of letters that I've all gotten bagged at Teresa's place now. And that was really great to know that, wow, like, I really was making an impact. At least there's some people out there that appreciate what I was doing, despite the fact that there's a bunch of trolls online that were going to our videos and saying, you know, oh, I'm glad that bastard's in jail. He deserves it. You know, it's the odd idiot saying things like that doesn't deter me when I'm getting hundreds of letters from people saying, hey, this is so-and-so from Belgium. Hey, this is so-and-so from New Zealand. Hey, this is so-and-so from Australia. This is so-and-so from the UK. I got letters from everywhere, Croatia, Russia, you name it. I was getting letters, and I was like, damn, like, we are having a worldwide impact. And if nothing else, this is going to backfire on them, and this is just going to embolden people to say, no, we can't let this go on because next time it's going to be me. It's not going to be Dean. We're all Dean Clifford now.
Beautiful. Yeah, I remembered when I was in Liverpool one of the times, they have this big banner, and there was a massacre that happened when working men were fighting for the vote in 1817. It was called the Peterloo Massacre, and Shelley the poet wrote this beautiful poem after, and these lines always inspire me. There, rise like lions after slumber in unvanquishable number. Shake your chains to earth like dew, which in sleep had fallen on you. Ye are many, they are few. I love that. It could be called a. Yep. It could be called your theme song, I think, Dean.
there was a picture somebody posted on my Facebook yesterday that I got a really good laugh out of at just how obvious and true it is. And I think it must have been one of the protests in New York. I really don't know. And you see five police officers surrounded by thousands upon thousands of people in the street. And there's a small circle of police, nothing but people all around them. And somebody put in a little caption, you're all under arrest. And I started laughing my ass off.
Beautiful.
That's what it's got to be. When you got five idiots that still haven't figured out that we're done with this system and we are the power, and they still think they have authority when they're surrounded by thousands of people that will kill them and rip them to pieces right there on the spot if they really felt like it, that's where we're at right now. They haven't figured out yet that we have the power and there's way more of us. What they've got, especially in Canada, think about this. What they've got, like 5,000 full-time staff member RCMP in Canada, help patrolling the roads, and they're saying that they believe there's anywhere between 30 to 150,000 of us already. But I think that number's wrong. I think you could probably multiply that by 5 or 6. They're outnumbered already. We just have been gracious enough to not get physically violent yet because we don't believe in that, and we're preaching people to not be violent. If they really wanted to come down to 10 million of us surrounding their buildings and hanging every single one of them, okay, if it's got to come to that, I guess that's what it's going to come to 5 years from now. But I highly suggest they take notice that we are the power. This is not our will that they're enforcing right now. And they had better change with the times. They had better wake up and realize that they exist right now and they are still alive. Because we have allowed that to happen, not the other way around.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting to say that because we found it doesn't even take large numbers. When our people on the West Coast handed these stand-down orders to the RCMP during the Kinder Morgan dispute, they stood back because they know they're a criminal body. They know they've got the blood of a lot of people on their hands. And all you have to do is push the system a bit and they'll respond. So, you know, there's great power in what we're doing right now. People got to be aware of that. We've only got about a minute left here. Anything Teresa wants to add before we go off?
Hang on.
Well, I'm just saying, keep up the great work, you guys. It's great to get this out. People need to be aware of what's truly going on.
Yep. Speak out, everybody. Speak out, everybody out there that thinks that their voice isn't making a difference. These people, these criminals in charge right now, they're not going to rely on the 90% of people that will never leave their couches to defend them when stuff starts going south. They better worry about the 10% of people that are going to take to the streets and are going to do something about it, because those people sitting on their couches are not going to leave their house to protect these criminals.
Right. Well, Dean, we're running out of time, but we're going to have you back next week. For everyone listening in, tune in next week, same time, bbsradio.com/Radio Free Canada, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, next Sunday, the 29th. We'll have you all back then, and we'll carry it on then. Stay strong, brothers and sisters.
To the borders, Vermonters, come down with your breeches of deerskin and jackets of brown, with your red woolen caps and your moccasins. Come to the gathering summons of trumpet and drum. Come down with your rifle, let gray wolf and fox howl on in the shadow of primitive rocks. Let bare feet securely from pig pen and stall. Here's two-legged game for your powder and ball. And cheer, cheer, the green mountaineer. And cheer, cheer, the green mountaineer.